Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
The week, thanks for being with us. Pedro Gomez from ESPN, their baseball insider, baseball analyst, one of the best in the business, and Valley resident. Pedro will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. So Randy Johnson goes into the Hall of Fame this weekend, and Pedro was here. He actually wrote for the Arizona Republic at the time. And I want some Randy Johnson stuff, not just the usual, isn't it great Randy's going in, and is he the best left-hander ever, and all that nonsense, like low-hanging fruit. No, I want to know if Curt Schilling is not on the Diamondbacks, does Randy Johnson become the pitcher that is going into the Hall of Fame today? There's no question, in my mind, he still would have made it. But without Schilling, I don't believe Randy would be near the pitcher. He'd be close. I shouldn't say near. He'd be close, but I think Curt pushed him a little bit further, and I doubt Randy to this day would admit that, and I could be wrong. But, you know, I was there to see Randy every fifth day as well, like everybody else, so I've got my little antidotes. And over the next 3 days, we'll spin some of those in and out and bring some people. Are we tracking down players, Eric? Are you trying to find some of these guys? It's not like it's the 27 Yankees and they're all dead.
By we, do you mean us or do you mean me?
You. Are you finding any of these former players? You've got a line on a few of them.
You just answered your own question.
Yes, you are?
Yes, I am trying.
You're trying.
We're efforting, as we say.
Efforting. Yeah.
I know we're going to have Bob Brenly on tomorrow.
Well, that's good.
He was the manager. I mean, he did oversee that 2001 circus and was right there in the middle of it.
Do you think it was a circus?
In a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. But, well, I mean, he had to juggle. That was a veteran team, but there were still a lot of egos on that team. Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, Mark Grace,
sure.
Luis Gonzalez.
Sure, Steve Finley,
yep.
But here's the thing. I can't imagine, and maybe I'm wrong, was there ever a time that Bob is willing to admit that Randy stormed into his office and said, bleep, 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 bleep?
I'm sure. I would bet my paycheck on it.
Was there ever a time, it's not much, was there ever a time when Curt Schilling and Randy were at odds and Bob had to be peacemaker?
I would bet my expense check on it.
That's about right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is more than your paycheck.
Sometimes.
Was there a time when Bob went to the mound and Randy said, turn around and get the bleep out of here?
I would bet my house on that.
That's a good house. So, you know, when having Bob on, again, it's not going to be the, wasn't it great to manage the big unit? No, we're not into juvenile 101, 19-year-old questions here. I mean, sometimes we are, but no, let's dig a little deeper on this. So, what's he going to say? No, it was awful. What did it feel like to manage Randy? Come on, really? You're looking for the 12-second soundbite for the 520 sportscast? Come on. So we're going to go a little deeper with BB. That'll be fun tomorrow. You know what I'm thinking, though, is who is the next Arizona athlete to go into the Hall of Fame? And I would think it would be Kurt Warner. I would think it would be. But maybe not. And so I'm going to talk about that as the show goes on today. Michael Fabiano is going to join us at 10:50. So every week, the NFL Network's Fantasy Football Insider, it's that time of year, guys. We're not going to sit here and wait around till week one. This is the time of year, if you're going to do fantasy football and have the big money and the big winnings, that you're going to want to get your fantasy football questions answered from Michael Fabiano. You can shoot me your questions over on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Or you can email them to me, brad@sports360az. So there's two ways. Shoot me your questions. We are digital. I don't sit here and say, let's go to line one, and what's your question for Michael? It's all digital. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports before we get to Pedro and Michael Fabiano today. Brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. I'm actually looking at the Santan Ford website today. Usually I tell you about my driving experiences because they're so good. And the people like General Manager Tim Hovick and what he has done around the valley in sports with the Diamondbacks, with Arizona State, and the Arizona Cardinals. But today I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go on the website myself, and I could sit here and surf around santanford.com. I get it. It's 100 and some odd today. It's miserable out there. You guys are watching me at work doing your thing, and maybe you're in the market for a new vehicle. Do the certified pre-owned like my wife and I decided to do with a Ford Explorer. We had an expedition that had rolled up 160,000 miles on it. We were in that space in life. Three kids going to soccer and swim and school stuff and dance and football and all that. Okay, we were there. And then those three took off, and now we're down to one who are running from here to there. Yesterday, down at basketball practice at Arizona State. And then I took him over to another basketball practice for another club team. We're all over the place in the Ford Fusion, which makes a lot of sense for me, the hybrid edition. Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Go online, check out their wide variety selection at santanford.com. That's Santan Ford. So, Randy into the Hall of Fame. I'm pretty blessed. And Eric, I would say you're right there too, because you were in the middle of that whole deal when he pitched. And there has never been anything like a Randy Johnson start, because you never knew what was going to happen. And it just kind of grew through the years. It didn't matter if it was him hitting a bird down in Tucson, which he gets all bent out of shape about when anybody asks him about it. But it happened. Bird just exploded. Just part of the deal. I remember the day Curt Schilling was traded, and Curt gave me a heads up, and I went to his house. I was doing the television stuff. Went over to his house in Paradise Valley. I'm out there. He gives me the one-on-one. Within about 15 minutes, all the other stations show up. Yeah, a little pat on the back here. But Randy showed up. And he was in his Hummer. And he didn't get out of the Hummer, but he just kind of drove by and said, "Hey, clean up the neighborhood. Get all these people out of here." You know, it was the day that Curt gets traded, and all Curt could do was laugh at Randy as Randy drove by. There were stories about guys that would pull pranks, and Randy would say, and I don't know if he ever did, but he would say, "I know how to get a military helicopter to hover over your house at 3 a.m., so don't screw with me." There was a time where Randy rounded first and fell down, and they did the body spray paint of his body laid out on the field, which I thought was pretty funny. Remember that one?
Yep.
You know, there was the perfect game. There was him with the brawl with the Giants, and he put on the Giants cap after it was over with. It wasn't much of a brawl, but it was a brawl nonetheless.
And one day, I don't know if you remember this, but I think you may have been on vacation or out, but Jerry Colangelo came on this show and talked about how it all started with Randy Johnson. Before the Diamondbacks were even in existence, Randy Johnson's agent,
called
Jerry and said, "Randy wants floor
Actually,
seats
two agents.
For the Suns."
Yeah.
And Jerry's like, "Yep, I can help you out with this favor, but in a couple years, you know, I may need a favor back from you when Randy's a free agent." And sure enough, his agents remember that conversation, and the Diamondbacks and Jerry got the first crack once free agency started, and it all led to Randy Johnson, and now he's headed to Cooperstown this weekend.
I remember, and it's a great story of the loyalty that Jerry had at that point in time in recruiting free agents here. Again, not a swipe towards what we have here years later, but last time I checked, recruiting free agents to come to Phoenix has become a bit harder than it was back in the day. So there's stories like that that we want to get into over the next few days, because, look, guys, Randy going into the Hall of Fame, the next Diamondback or the next Cardinal or the next Sun, I don't see it happening for a while unless it's Curt, and I'll get into that a little bit later on the show. The game last night, so Matt Lato shut him down. Hellickson didn't pitch all that bad. You know, Hellickson was the bane of my existence the first, I don't know, month of the season. He was really slow and really not good and very predictable. It was like the 4 2/3 innings with 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, 8 hits, 4 runs, and it would take 2 hours just to get through the 4 2/3 innings. I'm not one of these guys that sits there with my wristwatch on. I hate it when play-by-play announcers whine and bitch and complain about how slow somebody's working. It's your job. Deal with it. But in Hellickson's case, you know, you'd watch him and you'd be like, man, he is slower than Armando Reynoso. And that takes some talent. Robbie Ray pitches tonight. I like Robbie Ray. I like him quite a bit. They're going to be sellers, the Diamondbacks. They should be sellers. But should they also be looking at some of these players potentially as, you know what, we could be buyers here looking at 2016. I think you've got to approach it from that standpoint as well. Yesterday, Peter King was with us on the NFL side, and quite a bit of discussion about the Cardinals and Jermaine Gresham and all that stuff. Whether they signed Jermaine Gresham or not, here's one person's opinion, and one of the best in the business, a national voice who joined me yesterday. Peter King is with us every week, the Monday Morning Quarterback, Sports Illustrated. I asked him about Jermaine Gresham fitting in with the Cardinals.
I don't think Jermaine Gresham was a great effort player with the Bengals. Zing. I think he was always a disappointment there.
Zing.
I certainly don't look at him as a huge difference maker for a team.
Zing.
But whoever signs Jermaine Gresham, I would view him as very much a complementary piece of the puzzle and not a surefire, very solid NFL starter. He'd have been signed by now if he was.
That's not a ringing endorsement. I'm sure the agent for Jermaine Gresham's like, come on. Marcus Mariota signed yesterday with Tennessee. So the week one of the NFL season, because it's the NFL and they plan this stuff out, and it's fine. I'm actually interested in watching this game. The Titans play Tampa, the opening weekend of the season. So it's probably going to be Mariota against Jameis Winston. It's also a weekend where Tom Brady may not even be on the field. That is yet to be decided. In fact, we're going to talk about the Brady factor a little bit later in the show with Michael Fabiano, because you guys are getting your fantasy football drafts together and you just don't know. What do you do with Brady? You know, you take Jimmy Garoppolo? I mean, what do you do there? And there's quite a bit more that I want to get to on the college football scene later on in the show, too. Some new stuff out of the Big 12. Bill Simmons has a new deal. Alex Morgan is in the news today on my sheet, and some other things that I've seen. Robert Sarver's house, those pictures. Robert's house, maybe we'll get to that, too. Pedro Gomez is next, though. ESPN Major League Baseball insider Pedro Gomez on the other side. Stories of when he covered Randy Johnson for the Republic and the national view of him going into the Baseball Hall of Fame this weekend. I'm Brad Sussmat, joining us day in, day out, AZ Central Sports. We appreciate the partnership with the Arizona Republic here on Sports360AZ.com.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Pedro Gomez joins us every week, ESPN baseball analyst, insider, good friend, Valley resident. Your first ever dealings with Randy Johnson.
It was 1995, and he pitched just one of those absolute Randy Johnson games, struck out 18 at the Kingdome against the Oakland A's, and Mark McGwire hit one to the moon off of him. To the moon, and I'm not exaggerating. It was one of those where McGwire just caught one of those 97-mile-an-hour fastballs and just launched it, and it went all the way against like the back facade at the Kingdome in left field. And he had 18 strikeouts. McGwire hit that bomb, and the A's won, I want to say, 2-1 or so. And so, you know, we talk to McGwire, then we rush over to the other clubhouse. And he could not have been more fiery, less congenial. You know, it was like if you were in a bag with a hornet's nest. But that's how he was. That's how he was. He may have gotten 18 strikeouts. He may have pitched this magnificent game, but McGwire got him in the end, and they lost, and he was just livid.
Okay, in terms of surliest athletes you've ever covered, you're known for your Barry Bonds years. I mean, among other great things that you've done in your career. but surly and Bonds are one thing. Surly and Randy Johnson, another. Are they about the same?
They're a little different because there were days that you could actually talk to Rand. And that wasn't always the case with Bonds. If Randy was pitching tomorrow, today was off limits.
Yeah.
And certainly the day that a pitcher starts, and you could even go 2 days before he was pitching, that day was off limits. Closest thing I've seen to an NFL quarterback where, you know, the quarterbacks only speak one day during the week. It's the absolute closest. And in terms of surly, absolutely. Randy Johnson, as surly as they come. If I had to put together a top five list, he would absolutely be on the list. But there was also a level of respect, and it was mutual respect. If he did respect you as a reporter, he did give you time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going up to him once and just saying, because I used to, you know, I watched him closely. And, you know, you knew you were watching somebody special at the time. And I always tend to pay a little more attention. And I went up to him once and I just said, man, watching you pitch, watching you on days you pitch, I'm in the clubhouse beforehand, and it literally, Brad, was like watching a caged lion.
Yeah.
Maybe before he was going to be unleashed into the Colosseum and, you know, back in the Roman Empire days. He was just so fidgety and pacing and could not wait to take the mound. And I remember talking to teammates of his who said, I think he'd almost rather us score one run in the first and then just be three up, three down, three up, three down every time we come to bat. He just wants to be on the mound.
It was
the only time he's challenged.
What was interesting is when he would get on his rant, we're talking with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, and of course, Valley resident, and was with the Arizona Republic at the time of a lot, for his not his entire career. You'd left, right? So you weren't here for the entire run of Randy.
Yeah, and then I mean, I lived in Phoenix, so I would go out there, and then he left as well and came back.
But here's the thing. Help me on this one for the fan, the listener. Randy would explain to us why strikeouts were overrated and because it would get his pitch count up. And he would go on and on that rant that we'd come in and he'd strike out 12, 15, 18, and he'd say, I threw too many pitches tonight. And you're watching a guy do his craft, but at the same time, he was upset when his pitch count would get up because he had to throw so many strikes to get guys out. And I always thought that was interesting about him, that he's known as a strikeout artist, but he thought that what he's known most for was overrated.
I know. It is interesting. And the fact is that guys that tend to be strikeout pitchers, it's because hitters are so overmatched.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd rather have two pitches and an out. Here's a ground ball to shortstop. Boom, there's an out. Two pitches. You know, next pitch, fly ball to center field. Hey, three pitches, two outs. Of course, a pitcher would always rather do that. But when your stuff is that filthy and it's hit, it really does miss the bat. Well, your pitch counts are going to tend to be higher. And he absolutely always had that his entire career. And don't forget the first 4 or 5 years of his career when he was in Montreal and those early years in Seattle. He led the league in walks, and it wasn't even close for second place. I mean, you're talking about a guy that almost walked 200 batters a year for about 3 or 4 years because he didn't know where the ball was going. He threw it, you know, a million miles an hour, but he had no idea where it was going.
If Schilling doesn't come to the Diamondbacks, does Randy reach? He still gets the Hall of Fame, in my opinion, and he's still going to be very, very good, even great. But Schilling did give him an extra gear, or did he not? Do you think that whole angle's overrated?
Oh, God, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no question about that, especially when you look at 01, because you remember the first 3 months of the season, Schilling was on pace to just go like something like a 25-2 record. He was on pace to just crush everybody. And Randy had some hard luck the first 2 months and wasn't getting the same numbers. And it's almost like Randy said, okay, now there's about 2 months left in the season. I'm just going to lap the field. And he put it into a different gear, like you said. And all of a sudden, at the end of the year, Randy's numbers had surpassed Schilling's when it didn't even seem possible that that was going to be able to be accomplished. And Randy wound up winning the Cy Young. Look, if there was any type of competition involved, Randy just always wanted to win. It didn't matter what it was. It did not matter what it was. He always wanted to win. And I think to a degree, the great ones all have that.
Okay, so here's one that people ask me often. And my answer is, I think there was a competitive working relationship with the two. I don't ever sense that Randy didn't care for Kurt, as some ascertain, that there was like, they didn't care much for one another. Where did you come down on that one?
I didn't think there was a tight friendship at all. I thought that they were both high-intensity competitors, and they loved being on the same team because they knew greatness was within reach. And sure enough, you know, they wound up winning a World Series together and being co-MVPs of that World Series. But I never, ever, ever, and in talking to teammates and things like that, this was not a close friendship by any means.
They didn't hate each other, though. They didn't hate each other.
No, I wouldn't say hatred. No, yeah. No. I would not say hatred. But, you know, they weren't going out for beers together or having dinner together. Nothing like that.
Was Randy, we saw and remember the incident in the dugout in San Francisco with he and Luis. Okay.
Yeah.
How much disdain or resentment or just hard feelings was there within the organization with his teammates? In your view.
But that wasn't just here. That was everywhere Randy was. Okay. I remember talking to some Astros, and remember Randy got traded to Houston for a, you know, he was a mercenary at that point in the sense that a hired gun. The Mariners knew he was going to be a free agent. It was a trade deadline, much like right now, and the Astros thought, hey, if we can add a guy like Randy Johnson, we have a chance to win the whole thing. So they, you know, they rolled the dice. They got Randy in a trade. Randy only played for the Astros for 2 years. I mean, for 2 months.
It was quick.
Yeah, for 2 months. But it was, I think, his second or third start for the Astros. And the game is 0-0. It's the sixth inning, and Randy is dealing. But whoever he was up against, and I can't remember who it was at the time, maybe Kevin Brown or somebody, was equally, you know, pitching, throwing darts and throwing up zeros. And Johnson, who has only been with this team for about 2 weeks, this is at the Astrodome, you know, does whatever he does, three up, three down, and he's walking into the dugout and just yells out loud, are we going to score any bleeping runs today or what? And these are guys that he's only been with for about 10 days to 14 days. You know, Jeff Bagwell, Craig Biggio, that group of Astros, and he's just yelling at them, can you guys do your job? So that was Randy, too. I mean, Randy, you know, the fight with Luis in San Francisco in the dugout, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But if you talk to anybody about who they want on the mound every 5 days,
sure,
his name always came up.
And all that stuff is now behind him, I think. I don't see anybody or heard anybody that has resentment towards him all these years later. Like, they've let it go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree with you. I don't see that or hear that anymore whatsoever. Yeah. And I think they all recognize, hey, I got to play with Randy Johnson. Or I got to face Randy Johnson. And there's something to be said for that.
The Bob Brenly, so when you look at the manager, and Bob's going to be with us tomorrow, did he do the best that he could do on that? Did he just have to maintain it? Did he just have to put his tail between his legs because it's Randy Johnson saying go back to the dugout? Did Randy go into his office and slam the door and say, this is what's happening? Give me a feel about how BB handled that, and probably Brian Price too.
Yeah, and Buck Showalter. I mean, yeah. there were guys that managed Randy, and I do not want to by any means say they were afraid of him, but they respected him to the point where, look, if he wants to stay out there, I'm going to let him stay because you're talking about a guy that was very rarely injured, especially his arm. He had the back issues, but not arm issues really, and really knew his body better than anyone. And I remember over the years, Brad, I've talked to hitting coaches, managers, players, the one thing they all say is the absolute best players are the ones that don't need a coach. The best hitter is the one that does not need any advice from a hitting coach.
Sure.
The best pitcher is the one that needs zero advice from a pitching coach. And that was Randy Johnson. He knew himself better. He knew how dominant he was. He knew where he stood within the ladder of the game at the time that he played. And you know, Lou Piniella has told me for years that he loved having Randy because Randy would let him, there were signs that Randy would give when he wanted to come out or when he was done. And he knew. And if he didn't see him, he was going to let Randy go. And I think Showalter was the same. I think Brenly was the same. I think Price was the same. I think they all have been the same. That's a guy, there are certain guys that are just on a different level.
Sure.
And you kind of let them be their own coach.
Before I get you out of here, so the deadline's next week. We'll talk further about it. Think anything major is going to happen? Are you hearing anything around the Diamondbacks in terms of being sellers? I mean, it's all the Cole Hamels talk here and Justin Upton there, but are you hearing anything major, and have you heard anything around the Diamondbacks?
No. I would be surprised. I mean, Trumbo was the big piece, and I doubt you may see some minor movement, but I don't think you'll see anything major, no.
All right. Let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Okay, Brad. Take care.
Pedro Gomez every week, sports360az.com, ESPN's. Pedro Gomez, that was great. Did I hit it on that? I mean,
I think you did.
More stories?
And Pedro always brings and gets a little different perspective because he's down in so many clubhouses and he talks to so many different players. Mm-hmm. I mean, the little anecdote about Johnson when he was with the Astros, I was just, as he was telling the story, I was just envisioning that and seeing Randy kind of, you know, he had that long stride.
Biggio and Bagwell sitting there.
And he walked slowly off the mound. And I can see him getting the steps to the dugout. And I can just see that snarl on his face, and I can just hear the profanity when he talks about, let's get some bleeping runs.
Did I ever tell you the Randy antidote? He and I got stuck in an airport together when I was doing games.
A long time ago.
Yeah,
I'll probably tomorrow
or Friday. It was pretty cool. Sports360az.com. So Jalen Strong's in the news a little bit. He's in the doghouse in Houston. I want to get to that on the other side for you Sun Devil fans. And another player has decided not to go play for Mark Cuban, and he's got an Arizona angle. I've got that on the other side as we continue on. Michael Fabiano in about 15 minutes on the NFL Network and Fantasy Football. Stay with us. So remember when Jalen Strong fell like a rock at the NFL draft? I mean, like somebody put an anvil on his ankle and tossed him overboard. He just sunk and sunk and sunk. And there was this, I thought he was going to be a first-round pick. And there were people trying to, it's really not that big of a deal. Well, it's a really big deal. He left school, and there was a lot of money that was left on the table. That's just a fact. So this came out today. I'm reading this on Pro Football Talk this morning. I saw this. At Texans rookie minicamp on May 9th, Coach Bill O'Brien said he needed his young players to get into better shape, and he singled out Jalen Strong as someone who really needed work on his conditioning. Strong weighed 231 at minicamp in May. Now, though, Jalen Strong is down to 211 pounds. Jalen Strong was overweight. Time to eat, Strong added. Went into rookie camp 231, currently 211. God is good. Time to eat. Hashtag the gods. He weighed 217 at the combine, 231 in May, 211 today. So the question I would have on that is, okay, what was going on? Was it something physical? Did you really let yourself go that far? You had to know that if you're just sitting there chowing down, that you're going to be slower. And there was that conversation around I forget now. Was he at the combine when you were at the combine? I don't think he
was. He was, but I just missed him.
You missed him. Right. He was probably getting some food.
I literally missed him by like a half hour at the combine. Literally. Just missed him.
But that was a big mystery around the draft. There's always players fall,
I mean, the whispers, Brad, were he had a hand injury.
I remember there was
an alleged drug problem at ASU. I mean, who knows if that's true? It can be just people starting rumors for the sake of starting rumors.
But 231, this is by his own admission, was I weighed 231.
Yeah, he went back to Philly and maybe just ate too many cheesesteaks.
231, so, it's good to hear. And
the beauty of being in your early 20s is you can drop 20 pounds within a couple months.
What are you saying?
I'm just looking in the mirror myself.
What are you talking about? So that's good. Yesterday, Peter King was with us, and we were talking about the Cardinals in this season. I really believe that for the Cardinals, more than any other team, this is not breaking news here, and this is not splitting atoms, but of all the teams that have been talked about, that if they don't get solid play out of their quarterback, that's one thing. Like Andy Dalton, okay? Andy Dalton's going to sit around in Cincinnati, and fans are going to sit there and wait for him to implode. That's just because how it goes with Andy Dalton. In Seattle, they feel like they've got the next Hall of Famer in Russell Wilson, the way that he's played. Who knows about his contract? If we're talking about the Arizona Cardinals, we all saw what happened when Carson Palmer disappeared last season with the injury. I think of all the teams in the NFL, you can't point to one team. Like if Peyton Manning doesn't get it done in Denver, there's still some pretty talented players around him, and he's getting to the end of the line. That's just a fact. We don't know about Tom Brady. We're going to talk about that in a couple minutes on the fantasy segment with Fabiano, if it's Jimmy Garoppolo's time. But we know that in Arizona, that they were well on their way to being a playoff team with a shot at going much further. Yeah, they made the postseason, but it was a disaster once they got there. So here's Peter King on this whole tying Carson Palmer together with the Cardinals, more so than any other team in the NFL, a guy that's got to be on the field.
It's almost like everything else is in place in Arizona. And as long as Carson Palmer can play, I'd say if the over-under is 14, Carson Palmer plays 14 games, in my opinion, Arizona's a playoff team. If he plays 10 to 12, I think they're really going to struggle to make the playoffs. And if he plays less, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
That's good stuff there from Peter, because I would happen to agree with him lock, stock, barrel. But there are those other players that if injuries happen at certain positions, like any team, you're going to be in trouble. But no more so than Carson Palmer here in Arizona, and that's one of the best in the business, and Peter King. On the college football front, so Big 12 Media Day has been going on the last couple of days, and we've been talking about that as a conference that I believe that other conferences will look at poaching teams from, like Oklahoma and like Texas. I'm of the opinion the Pac-12 should be looking that direction. Problem with the Pac-12 is their network isn't settled, and it will be next week when Eric and I go out to L.A. next week, and we're out there for Pac-12 Media Day to do our thing for a couple of days. Larry Scott's probably going to swing by our position, and I'm probably going to have to look him in the eye and say, can you get this thing figured out on television distribution for like the fourth year in a row? There are several people that we've spoken to in the conference at different schools that aren't happy with the Pac-12 and their television network and lack of being distributed. The Big 12, though, yesterday, Bill Hancock, who's a very nice man, we've had Bill on the show, he is the College Football Playoff Executive Director. He is not of the opinion that the Big 12 is cutting off their face on this deal about not having a championship game. The Big 12's marketed one true champion. It's not true at all. They got left out last year. Texas and Oklahoma haven't been good. That's why their conference is down. We went through all that. But Hancock last night said, quote, 1 year doesn't make a trend. I think the Big 12 is smart to sit back and wait. I think they're smart to be deliberate and thoughtful about this, meaning not having a title game. You know, I look at that and I say, okay, is Notre Dame smart? Because let's be honest here. If Notre Dame this year goes undefeated and they don't have any conference game, they're not going to get left out because they're Notre stinking Dame. And that's the one fly in all of this. If the Big 12 goes through another year of being shut out, then yeah, there's going to be hell to pay on this front. I don't agree with him. I like Bill. I think that's just more he doesn't want to ruffle feathers of his good buddy Bob Bowlesby. What do you make out of this one, Eric? You on that one too?
I think if Baylor or TCU start the season in the top five, which both are expected to, maybe Baylor is like six, and either of those teams run the table, they're going to make it. Simply because when you start the year and the expectations are high and you can avoid a landmine through 12 games and play in a Power 5 conference, how are you going to keep one of those teams out?
No, well, yeah, Baylor and TCU that play each other so late in the year, too.
That's right.
They play Thanksgiving weekend.
If they're undefeated, Black Friday. One of those two teams is going to have a loss. But that's my take on it. And I don't know. It's becoming a fatiguing topic for people who like the Big 12, like myself.
Okay, but Notre Dame is not a fatiguing topic.
No.
You've got to look at Notre Dame and all this discussion.
But then it's let's put up resumes. Let's put up, you know, Notre Dame's schedule against a Baylor or a TCU schedule. And Notre Dame's will be better. Let's look at quality wins.
Notre Dame's will be better.
Maybe.
So we'll get into that.
Oklahoma and Texas are sort of the unknown. They're not expected to do well, but they still have Texas talent and they still have Oklahoma talent. If they can figure out the quarterbacks, those two teams could have a breakthrough team.
We're going to talk about Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons is back in media, which I think is good. I mean, I'm he's not somebody that I have to dive into, but I actually think this is a very smart move on his part. And Alex Morgan's in the news today, too. We'll get into that a little bit later. But in the next segment, Michael Fabiano, the NFL Network, the fantasy football focus that we do every week, your fantasy football questions around the National Football League. You're trying to get into your pool. 41 million Americans play the sport. That was just last year. It is the hottest thing. This is why people watch the NFL. Let's not just sit here and cut through it. It's not about my team wins or loses. It's how much money am I going to make either betting on games or fantasy football? That's that. And Michael's next to go through our weekly questions with him. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sussmat.
Good to catch up with Michael Fabiano, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. He joins us. Mailbag is full. I was just talking in the last segment about Jalen Strong and his weight. So I'll just go there because I've had a couple of questions in the mailbag about him. Not the biggest name to start out with, but what do you make of the Texans and Strong?
Well, you know what? You would think that he's got a pretty good shot to start because there's not a lot of competition at that position after you get past Nuke Hopkins. You're looking at Cecil Shorts, Nate Washington. So I don't know that Strong is someone I'm drafting in a redraft, especially in a 10-team league, but I think at least that situation is worth monitoring because anytime there's a potential for a starting job that's going to be competed for, there's a chance for opportunities to produce points for fantasy football owners. So I would definitely be keeping tabs on that. The one sidebar is that quarterback position is a little bit questionable right now. So I don't know that I'd be expecting Jalen Strong to come out and be this year's Kelvin Benjamin.
Rookie wide receiver you're most excited about?
I mean, Amari Cooper. I mean, that one's easy. And, you know, there's a trend typically of the player that everyone is most excited about in terms of first-year players not being the number one fantasy player. We saw that last year. A lot of people were excited at running back about Bishop Sankey, and it was Jeremy Hill at running back. So sometimes these things are a little bit difficult to predict, but everything that I have heard and everything that I've seen about Cooper, comparing him to Torrey Holt, a guy who can stretch the field, who's a great route runner, who's got great hands and great speed, and he has a quarterback. I like Derek Carr. You're not looking at the same sort of average, mediocre quarterback in Oakland anymore. So he's someone that is clearly moving up draft boards, no question about that. And then you're also looking at Kevin White in Chicago. Nelson Aguilar has a shot to be pretty prominent in Philadelphia. But the number one wide receiver in fantasy football, at least out of the rookies, has got to be Cooper.
How early are you seeing him go in these drafts so far?
I've seen him go in the fourth and fifth round. Fourth round of a 12-team league, fifth round of a 10-team league. And that's right about where he should go. I wouldn't be comfortable drafting him really any higher than that.
Let's go to DSCH. What's Keenan Allen's potential as wide receiver two compared to Benjamin, Matthews, Johnson, Andre Johnson?
Well, I like Allen to bounce back. A lot of good reports, positive reports about him taking things a lot more seriously after what was a very disappointing sophomore season. Talk about him potentially being utilized in the slot. You also have to remember that the Chargers will not have Antonio Gates for the first four games, which means potentially utilizing Allen a little bit more. If you look since 2010, when Antonio Gates has not been in the lineup for the Chargers, Philip Rivers sees an increase in his explosive plays and his yards per completion. So that tells you that, well, he's not going intermediate as much because his big tight end is not there. He'll go a little bit deeper, a little bit farther downfield. Keenan Allen could be the beneficiary there. I mean, I do like Kelvin Benjamin also. Those guys are very closely clumped together in the number two wide receiver category. So you know, you're looking at guys at that stage like Keenan Allen, like Benjamin and Julian Edelman. Amari Cooper is in there as well. Maybe a Sammy Watkins too. All those guys are twos, and if you're focusing on wide receivers early in your draft, you could even get them as threes.
Brendan, favorite drafting spot for 12-team standard league?
Right in the middle, but you have to be able to draft successfully no matter where you are. But if you're in the middle, so you're talking about 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there, you don't have a terribly long time to wait in between picks. And I feel like you're sort of on a good plane in terms of where you're going to be drafting. If you're number one, your first pick is going to be phenomenal, at least hopefully from a fantasy standpoint, it's phenomenal. A lot of people drafted Adrian Peterson last year, number one, and LeSean McCoy. Obviously, we know what happened with Peterson, and McCoy was a bit of a disappointment. But then you have to wait all those picks to go ahead and make your second selection. Your third selection comes up quick, and so on and so forth. I'd rather be in the middle.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, senior fantasy analyst, with us for a couple of minutes, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Okay, I'm getting a lot of questions, and I'm sure you are as well. And you and I have talked through the years how it's important to be in leagues where you don't draft too soon. Mm-hmm. That said, what is your strategy with Tom Brady today? What are you telling people to do in Brady? And does Garoppolo come anywhere in this discussion late?
In a 10-team league, no. In a 12-team league, probably not. Quarterback is pretty deep. And I'd rather take a player like Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota than Jimmy Garoppolo, to be quite honest with you. Brady is a situation that you can use to your advantage. Now, he's not Peyton Manning 2013, or he's not Aaron Rodgers, or he's not Andrew Luck, but he's still pretty good. And in fact, even though he started off last season poorly, he still was in the top 10 in fantasy points among quarterbacks. He's going to drop because right now he's suspended for four games.
Right.
Use that to your advantage. Go ahead and draft a quarterback. You can get, say, Tony Romo between rounds 8 and 10 and still get Tom Brady in the 9th or 10th round. What I like to do is go after those running backs and wide receivers early. You've heard me sing this song a million times. Mm-hmm. Maybe get a tight end in there depending on who's available. But then once I get to round 8 through round 10, I'm probably going to take two quarterbacks in those three rounds because I can still get two number ones even though they're not elite. I can still get Romo and Roethlisberger or Romo and Ryan, and now I can potentially get Romo and Brady or Brady and Big Ben or Brady and Ryan. I mean, you can get two really good quarterbacks. Use Brady's suspension or at least his current suspension to your advantage in drafts. I'm telling you something right now. You're going to be thrilled that you did if after four games, assuming that's what happens
right
at the end of the day,
right,
you have Tom Brady for weeks 5 through the rest of the year. And it's almost like picking up the best free agent. You just sit on him for 4 weeks.
Yeah, so stash him. I mean, I think that's the right strategy, and I thought that's what you would say. But
you can do that with Antonio Gates, too,
yeah,
because the tight end position is really thin. I mean, once you get past Gronkowski and Graham and Olsen and Kelsey and Martellus Bennett, if you want to put him in the top five, it's a crapshoot. So say you end up with Zach Ertz somewhere at the end of your draft, middle to end, go ahead and take a flyer on Gates, sit on him for 4 weeks. He was one of the two best tight ends in fantasy last year. His numbers are going to drop off, clearly, but would you rather start Gates or would you rather start someone like Austin Seferian Jenkins or a player who's not going to give you consistent production week in and week out? Gates has a chance to do that. A
couple other questions. A lot about Larry Fitzgerald. I think this is coming, obviously, from here in Arizona, but nationally. Mm-hmm. With what you see with the Cardinal wide receivers, where is Fitz falling in drafts?
Right now, he's being picked as a 3 or a 4, depending on the size of your league. If you're in a 12-team league, he's probably a 3. In a 10-team league, he's probably more of a 4. But the player that I keep hearing about and the player that really intrigues me is John Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be shocked if Brown led all Cardinals wide receivers in fantasy points. Michael Floyd had a down year. Fitzgerald's had a few down years. But Brown is that guy that people are talking about, and he's not going to cost you more than a late-round pick. I would probably draft John Brown ahead of Floyd. I have Fitzgerald just ahead of Brown at this point. Maybe that's going to change as we get closer to the preseason. But right now, if I had to say target one wide receiver in Arizona because of his upside and because of where you're going to be able to get him, it would be John Brown. One other thing about the Cardinals.
Sure.
Assuming Carson Palmer doesn't have any setbacks with his knee, and he's looked really good so far, there's been all positive reports. Do you know that he averaged 0.7 fantasy points per completion last year? When Drew Stanton came in, he averaged right around 0.67. That's pretty good. And if you put Palmer healthy in this offense, he is going to produce for you. Before he got hurt, he was really good. And I think whether you're a Cardinals fan or not, getting Carson Palmer late as your number two quarterback could end up being a very smart move.
Frank Gore, where are you at on Frank Gore? Getting a lot of questions about him.
I like him a lot. And I know he's 32, and I know that typically running backs break down, but he's like the Energizer Bunny. Every year we bury him, and you know, every year he's like Beatrice Kiddo in Kill Bill Part 2. He just climbs out of that grave. And I like the fact that he is going to see a lot fewer stacked line of scrimmage, because you can't do that against Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck will absolutely destroy you. He is a good fit for the offense. I think he's going to be the featured back. Maybe you're going to see a little Boom Heron in there, maybe some Josh Robinson, but he will be the featured back. I have him as an RB2. Now, there's some risk there, clearly, because of his age and because of his workload at the NFL level, but there's a lot to like about Gore there as well. I have him ranked 14th at running back right now.
Cool. Before I let you go, anything else going on fantasy-wise you think fans should be aware of this week? Injuries, news, notes, guys rising, falling, anything along those lines?
The biggest thing is Tom Brady. It really is. Yeah. Is that suspension going to be upheld for 4 games? Is he going to get 2 games taken off? Will his complete suspension be eliminated? And that's the big story. In fact, here at NFL Network, we've been waiting for news, because that's going to be the biggest news story heading into training camp, is what happens to Tom Brady. Not only because he is Tom Brady, but because from a fantasy standpoint, he's been so good for so many years, and that could potentially even improve the quarterback position, because right now you can't draft him until probably round 10. But if that suspension is decreased or eliminated altogether, well, Brady all of a sudden is going to be back in the 6th or 7th round conversation.
Good stuff as always, Mike. Talk next week. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.
You got it. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network joining us right there in the NFL Network offices. Appreciate him every week. 3 years now with Michael Fabiano, and every week he joins us right through the end of the fantasy football season in December. We start him here in July. Fans getting after it. Fans getting ready. It's like stocks. You got to pick early, and you got to be educated on this. So appreciate Michael joining us every week. On the other side, so there's a couple stories that caught my eye today. Bill Simmons has a new deal. He's going to resurrect somewhere. I'll tell you where. And one of the soccer players off the U.S. women's team makes the cover of FIFA. We'll talk about that and a few other things on my mind today. Sports360AZ.com. That's the website. Plenty of content on Sports360AZ.com. You're just finding us. Been here a couple of years, just below the surface, doing our thing. College, high school, pro, no particular order. We do things a little offbeat. Fantasy football is a big part of it. And we have fun Monday through Friday for a couple of hours here on AZ Central Sports as well. Thanks for being with us.